Hello.
It's always quite funny because people come in and go, you've got rather a strange group of photographs in here. It's just, I actually quite like some of them there.
Right, so this is now recording. Yes, that's perfect. Neil, it's really nice to see you, and you're so kind to let me come over. Caroline, I know, visited you not very long ago, and you were very good to show her all these wonderful documents. But I think what I'd like to do today is to try and talk about animals, particularly as one of the pictures that you gave us was showing some super sheep outside your house, looking all incredibly well. And actually, we don't have an awful lot of livestock in Hambledon anymore, and that worries me a little bit. Do you feel that?
Yes, I mean, I think Father was actually quite upset when they got rid of the beef cattle, but it was driven purely financially. Mm. The way the three farms, bear in mind my grandfather farmed in Bedhampton, Father's younger brother farmed in Finch Dean, and there was Manor Farm. Bedhampton had been the initial farm, which had the main dairy, and indeed grandfather had two milk rounds that covered Havant. Eventually the milk herd moved to the Finch Dean farm, and all the steers and any heifers that weren't required for the milk herd came to us to be fattened up for beef cattle. And even running it on that basis, there was still little financial gain to be got. Mm. And that's why the farm went from being a mixed farm in the old traditional way to being purely arable.
Yeah. I think when we moved to Chidden back in, whenever it was, 2006, Philip was saying much the same thing, Philip White. And in fact, I hadn't realised that he and I got something in common in the sense that he had some Suffolk sheep. And exactly the same as you, he was saying that, you know, the general economy and drove him really to do arable farming and arable only. And yet I'm old enough to remember when we had small, much, much smaller farms. We had horses, we had sheep, we had cattle. And we grew everything on the farm that we needed to keep those cattle sustained, those animals sustained. And now it's all different. Grain travels miles, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was saying, Karen, I mean, I remember the sugar beet being taken by tractor and trailer to Droxford.
To Droxford.
To go on the train.
Oh, wow, yes, of course.
And, you know, people forget.
Yeah.
That actually, you know, it's not that far away in terms of distance or in time, realistically, but that was sugar beet grown on the farm that would then go to Oxford on the train to be processed.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, we grew kale for the cattle for feed, obviously silage, hay,
yeah,
and barley straw,
yes,
of course.
Yeah.
So a wheat straw for littering up and some barley straw as well, in with the hay for feed.
Yeah, yeah.
And we used to mill our own
cow food. Yes, we did too, yeah, yeah.
The only thing that went in was nuts,
yeah,
that were bought in. Otherwise,
yes,
it was all
exactly
milled
the
on
same.
The farm.
Exactly the same, yeah.
Health and safety would not have appreciated the tractor with a live belt running to the milling machine.
And the beef? How would that have worked? Where would you have moved your cattle to for slaughter, for example? Or
well, when I was a boy, one of the great outings was to go to Chichester, to the market.
Chichester, okay. So it wouldn't be Petersfield, and it wouldn't have been Fareham.
No, and I think it was probably Chichester because that's where grandfather had always used, and so therefore it rather followed on.
You did it. Yeah.
And then then when Chichester really started dying down, I can't remember exactly where Father sent them, but eventually it went to trying to think of his name, had this sort of house in Petersfield.
Right, because there was one in Funtley, wasn't there? Not that far away from Fareham.
Yes, I'm trying to think of something Harris.
I wouldn't remember the name.
I can't remember the name. And so that's where they went. Mm. I mean, the lorries turned up and
off they went.
And of course, I mean, we had cattle out here in the yard. In the middle, where there's grass now, was two cattle yards. And then the main ones were up in the lambing yard, up in the middle of the farm.
So when we had cattle here, what are we talking about time-wise? What year are we roughly?
Certainly until the 70s.
Okay.
Mm. I can remember when the wooden yards were taken down and replaced with metal yards. And that must have been 59 or 60.
Yeah.
And then basically it came right out to where the tarmac is now.
Mm.
Mm. And that was obviously in the winter months. In the summer months there were always five in the paddocks, because Father liked to be able to look out the window and see some cattle.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, of course, were all out to grass.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the main yards were up in the lambing yard.
Yeah.
And that's where most of them would spend the winter. Obviously, some would be outside as well.
Mm. Yes, I was talking to Sue Sylvester the other day and trying to get a feel for the dairy herd she's got. So they would be wintered in October, more or less through to March, April time. So I said, well, where do you get your straw from? I mean, presumably she can't grow enough herself. So she is looking all around at farms all around here to get as much as she can lay her hands on.
Yes. Well, I mean, we used to actually grow, or to use all that we needed. And I can remember Father would sell straw off, even unbaled, and people would come in with their own balers and bale it and take it off.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with the demise of both beef and dairy cattle, there wasn't the requirement, and that's when they brought the choppers in on the back of the combine.
Mm.
But that, and the fact, of course, that they banned straw burning.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
So the only way to get rid of the straw was to chop it.
Mm. And put it back in the ground. Or to
put it back in the ground, which Father was always infuriated by, because he said it just bred the slugs.
Yes.
Because it didn't rot down.
No, I was looking out over Philip's land, and he has much the same thing, that he would put it back into the ground, but also he said there was always an issue, the extent to which people would actually pile in, get the job done, baled up and away, because he was literally in a queue with his tractors wanting to come in and get the land ready for the next year. And he said very often they would let him, well, it wouldn't be fair to say let him down, but they wouldn't be quite as quick. But this year just gone, I couldn't believe how fast they came in. I mean, they worked more or less till midnight and got everything, and we woke up the following day and it had been baled and it had gone.
Yeah.
So whether it went up north, I don't know. I mean,
you sometimes see some going down to the West Country.
Mm.
But of course, it's a lot easier now because you've got the big bales.
You've got the big bales.
When you think, I mean, again, there's boy, I suppose, so again, early 60s, one of my jobs on the farm in the summer was to go round collecting bales and putting them in eights.
Yes, yeah.
Because we had a... Yeah. Juggler, which would pick eight bales up at a time, but we didn't have the trailer, the sledge on the back that put them into eights. That came later on.
Okay,
so they went into a sledge, and when it got a number in, the guy would open the back and leave this pile of bales. And my job was to go around putting them into eights. Most soul-destroying job out.
Such hard work.
You know, 8 years. So 8, 9 years old, that was...
Well, yes, yes. And did you earn any money for doing that, Neil?
Yes, piecework.
What, a penny a bale?
It's something like that.
Oh,
I mean, we didn't get pocket money. We actually had to work...
Well, that was the family affair. And funnily enough, for the 11th of March, I would really like to know where the farms still are a family affair, and Sue was talking to me about it. But do you feel the children are going to take over? I mean, what?
Well, no. My, I mean, the farm belongs really to my brother and sister.
Mm.
My brother has three sons, none of whom are in farming or interested. My sister has no children.
And never likely, when they've done their bit in London or wherever they are abroad, never likely to have that urge to come back and...
No. It's a great shame.
It is so sad.
I suppose you can say, well, I never went into farming.
No, but
again, it was different as a second son. You tended not to...
Yes, you presumably went off and did your own career because of Andrew...
And to be honest, it was never my abiding passion.
No.
But it's very the sign of the times, and of course, a lot of it is driven by the fact that farms need to be bigger and bigger to be
and
viable.
And the equipment, obviously, to go with it.
And which is, of course, driven contractorisation.
Yeah.
So people tend not to have their own combines, etc. They rely on contractors.
Mm.
It's ludicrous, the price of machinery now.
Yes, and the sheer size of it. I mean, obviously, the history group is interested in looking at times gone by, but I think it's very good for us to record what is going on now. I mean, the combines that we're looking going through fields today are a whole different ballgame to the black and white pictures that we've got records of, but nevertheless... There's bound to be some development, and one of the developments which I've been made aware of is computers on board tractors now.
Yes.
To the point where they can determine what the ground is. Well, agronomists will determine what the ground is, but a computer can then be asked to go out and fertilise almost
and put the right amount
specific.
On to the right spot.
Can you believe that?
I know. It is amazing. But it's interesting. I mean, in the military, I mean... We always actually said that agriculture was driving sort of mechanical handling. So, I mean, if you look at some of the equipment in the military today, it has actually come from a farming background. Farming actually drove things like the forklift and bulk handling.
Yeah.
Again, driven by manpower costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is interesting, of course, is it was developed to overcome the manpower cost implications, but in itself it has now become such a big business, it's almost pricing itself out of the market.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you got any thoughts, just outlying thoughts, or has Andrew, about what Brexit's going to do? I mean, is it too early to say, really, isn't it?
I think it's too early. I mean, I know Andrew's view was that he thought we should stay in, because he just felt that, from a farming perspective, that was...
The way forward. Mm.
I think the safer option.
Okay.
Mm. I mean, when we were talking about it, he said that, you know, we would never go back to where we were before.
Mm.
Well, I'm not convinced.
Mm.
I'm really not.
Okay.
And interesting enough, I don't know if you saw or watch Countryfile, but they did some articles from New Zealand talking about how farming in New Zealand was impacted when we went into the EU. And they lost all their subsidies.
Mm.
Every subsidy went.
Mm.
And they were talking about how they had to evolve to farm in a different way and how they all thrive now. Mm. So... There's
ups and downs of all of this. We've got to just unpack it and see what we've got.
Absolutely. Mm. And I mean, there have been some interesting articles in the paper over the last week talking about actually the markets are, the world markets are out there.
Mm.
We should be able to compete. And indeed, food coming in is likely to be cheaper, which is good for the consumer. But actually will put added pressure on the farming community, which is why they're saying, so perhaps we still need to have subsidies, rather, as Labour bought in after the Second World War, to allow agriculture to survive and make sure that we have got some self-sufficiency.
Yes, yes. I wonder if we'll go back to just having strawberries in the summer instead of bringing them in.
No, I don't think we will.
No.
I mean, the trouble is, we have generation now that actually expects to be able to buy anything and everything at any time they want to. But isn't it interesting? A shortage of rain in Spain.
No courgettes.
No salad.
No salad. Oh, dear. So how far do you think grain travels now, Neil, in terms of... I see these huge grain trucks going around at harvest time. They're taking those back to where?
To the port.
Miles and miles.
Quite often straight to the port. You know, it's... Are they 32 tonnes, I think, the big ones are? Something like that.
I have actually asked Philip to tell me how big they are, because I'm not sure I know anymore. But they are
A lot of them go straight... depends whether it's going for milling...
Yes.
Where it's... Or what it's going
for. If it's
for.
Cattle fodder or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of the oilseed rape goes across to Europe to be rolled or pressed. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've seen Stephen Horn's setup on the way to Oxford on the right. Huge. And Stephen... I mean, it's like an industrial factory. Mm. And he actually stores grain and cleans grain for other people as well. Mm. It is massive.
Massive.
And it's just...
Well, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it big. I mean, there's no economies of scale and all the rest of it. You've just got to do it big.
Correct.
So it's a far cry, all this, from Droxford, dear little Droxford station, which is more or less where we came in. And I think rather sad. I mean, it's lovely to see it as a house, but it's rather sad that it's no longer Droxford Station.
And I've said to you before, you know, my memories of driving cattle through Waterlooville. If you tried doing it today. And yet, according to the Highway Code, livestock still has right of way on the road.
How long did that take you? As a matter of interest.
I'm trying to think. Because there were only four of us. So
and how many were you taking?
It was between 300 and 400 cattle.
Neil.
I must have been 8. My brother would have been 10. Stuart Baxter, whose mother lived in the rest. And father. Four of us. And off we went. And once we got them going, it wasn't too difficult. No. Except when you get down... to a road junction.
I can't bear it.
And one of us running ahead trying to slow traffic or stop traffic.
Yes.
And then going through Denmead was quite interesting. And then up Hamilton Road. And of course occasionally people quite often didn't have gates. So if they had gates we were trying to close the gates.
Yeah.
Cattle going into people's gardens. And then of course the interesting thing was trying to cross the A3 in Waterlooville.
We had cattle at the farm where I worked, just young stock. And of course, actually, we found it quite helpful having horses. We had a horse in front. I used to bring up the rear on a horse, and the person I worked for kept the horse in front. And as long as everything was done slowly and calmly, it was fine. If something got under their tails and spooked them, it was all hell let loose.
Absolutely.
I can't believe you did that.
Yeah, and it must have taken us over 2 hours, easily over 2 hours.
I can believe you. Gee.
No, it must. Thinking about it, I mean,
probably it's a long way.
Probably getting close three and a half to 4 hours, I think, because we had to go all the way down Holbert Road as well. And then turned off, and so they went into what we call Belmont, which is the back of the hill that overlooks the road along to Farlington, and that's where we took them. But we were allowed to be given a lift home.
You flipping well deserved it.
Well,
I just can't believe trying to do that now.
Well, we used to. I mean, I can remember going down, we used to cycle to Bedhampton to do a day's work.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that from other people saying how much, yeah.
11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
Cycled there and do a full day in the field and then cycle back. Mm. That was either potato planting or potato lifting.
Jeez.
With the women from Lee Park, which is another story in
that's
itself.
Another story. Well, I think that's a jolly good place to stop, but it's been fantastic talking to you, Neil, and I hope that on the 11th there'll be plenty of questions coming your way. Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's where I learned to swear, I think. Listen. Yes, we used to have an old RAF 4-ton lorry that used to go round Lee Park and collect these things. Take them to the